Welcome to Legal News and Review, recipient of the Florida Bar Award of Excellence. Legal News and Review, the only real problem solver radio program using the law, with your moderator, Philip Bell, and hosts and legal panel attorney, Gary Singer, chair of the Broward County Bar Association's Real Property Section. Gary Singer is board certified in real estate law and a syndicated columnist from the Sun Sentinel. He is an expert in his field of practice. Now, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
On the docket for today's broadcast, enacted in law, May 24th, 2018, part of the broader Economic Growth Regulatory Relief Consumer Protection Act. Wow, that's a mouthful.
You're good.
The new law, thank you, provides seniors greater protection from financial exploitation. A 2016 study found that senior fraud is widespread, with the average victim losing $36,000. And get this, 10% of those polled lost $100,000 or more. Today, we're going to be talking about elder law and how to protect ourselves and our loved ones. And we're very pleased to have elder law attorney Gail Fisher from the law offices of Gail Fisher PL. Attorney Fisher will be giving us the 411 on elder law and how to protect our loved ones and, of course, ourselves. We're all getting older. But first, I'd like to welcome our legal panel for today's program. Gary Singer, good afternoon.
Hey, Phil. How you doing? Very excited for today's episode.
Yep. And of our audience, if they remember, Linda Alley. Linda, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Doing great. Another day in paradise, Linda.
Good.
We're recording live at the Kelly Ustaw Building here in the mock courtroom, which is totally cool. It's like a forensic setting. You know, attorneys all over the country refer cases to Kelly Ustaw because of their resources, but more importantly, their successes. And when you turn over a case to them, your fight becomes their fight. Listen, if you or a loved one has been severely injured because of negligence of someone else, you may be eligible for compensation. Please just go to justiceforall.com, or you can call 954-522-6601. But being this is drive time, just remember justiceforall.com. Gail Fisher, welcome back to Legal News and Review.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me back again.
You know, it's been about 2 years last you were on the program, and you were telling us about the predatory scammers who prey on the elderly. Gail, this month, the Justice Department closed a phone room of predators. I sent you the article, and this was regarding, get this, the IRS scam. And before we get into other surrounding issues, what do you suggest to your clients who get calls, to warn them if indeed they do get the call?
Well, first off, if it's an IRS, they're not going to call you. They're going to send you a letter. So if you do get a call from them and you have an accountant that you work with, mm-hmm. I would contact the accountant first and let them know what was sent to you, what the message was, because they've been working with you. They know your tax, information anyway.
Right.
And they're going to give it to them anyway if the IRS is supposed to get it. But generally speaking, the IRS is not going to call you. They're going to send you a letter. They're not going to email you or text you.
Right.
They're going to send you a letter.
And I understand that some scams, they will call you and say they're their grandchildren, and they're in jail, and they need money to get out.
That's another one. They call
right.
and say, hi, Grandma, Grandpa, and then Grandma, Grandpa says, hey, Josh. And they say, yeah, Grandma, it's Josh, and I'm in jail and wherever, and I need some money to get out. Can you, wire me some? So
that's called social engineering, right? Social engineering scams?
Well, yeah, I guess you'd call it that. And yeah. I would tell them, first of all, hopefully Grandma and Grandpa are keeping in touch with their family so they know when their grandson or daughter
sometimes
is traveling.
Sometimes they look on, Facebook and whatnot and make it very real. I've had that right. actually personally. I haven't had people calling me saying, you need money? Because my wife actually made the mistake of posting on Facebook. We don't do that anymore.
Right.
Those years
right.
ago. And they can fake caller IDs now, right?
They
make it look like it's really from that person.
They can.
It's getting harder and harder. So the bottom line is you don't want to be, it's better sometimes to be the bad grandparent, but still have your money, and you can make up for it in other ways with the grandkids.
You visit them in jail. It's not a big deal. You didn't send the money, so
there
you visit
you go,
them.
Right.
Hire them a good lawyer.
There
typically,
you go.
You can find some.
Typically, people go to attorneys for wills, trusts, and estates. So what is elder law?
Well, elder law really is a it's the clientele that we're, you know, that we're treating. You know, our clients are elderly.
Well, I'm 57. So would I be considered an elder? Shut up.
Yes.
Shut up, Gary.
Well, according to AARP, you could be, because my 50 is when AARP, you could join them. But really, the elder law would be someone over that senior citizen, what they consider 60, 62.
They get discounts on movie theater passes.
Right.
Okay, gotcha. But the big question happens to be, and I've been asked this before to ask you, is when should you contact an elder law attorney?
As soon as possible. It's never too early to contact an attorney, especially in this area. First off, I'm an estate planning elder law attorney, so
right.
I could work with you on your estate plan, help you establish that, and then work with you so that strategies are in place for long-term care provision. So when you get older and deteriorate and you need care, you have a plan in place.
Well, you have options if you want to stay in your home in particular.
Right. It's not a crisis planning. You have some idea of what we're going
to
do.
But they come to you for crisis plan.
I get a lot of that, too.
Now, Gail, my understanding, to kind of bring this to light, as someone who doesn't practice in this area, I find it very interesting. It's similar to some areas I practice in, but it's a very strong specialty. But I understand that there's a lot of non-attorneys trying to give advice, especially in the, I believe, the Medicare planning realm and the Medicaid planning realm, that non-attorneys giving advice, and sometimes not very good advice. What should people watch out for when dealing with the issues, especially involving Medicaid and nursing homes and whatnot?
Well, when you refer to somebody or you find somebody and it's this organization or company, you want to first make sure that they're a lawyer, you know, and ask to see the lawyer, ask to see their license if you need or whatever to confirm that it is a lawyer that you're talking with. Because some of these, like you said, what these organizations, they come out, they say, I'm a certified Medicaid planner. Well, there's I mean, it's become a thing because schools out there are offering the course, but it's not a recognized, like a lawyer, it's not like you've taken a test and have somebody like the Florida Bar that you're responsible to or can be reported to. So it's just another, the certification is just another means that probably for a school to make some money on it. So, but I mean, you want to make sure that, you know, it's them, that they're working with a lawyer, you know, and who the lawyer is, and getting documentation or identification.
Because it's a specialty, right? It really is a strong specialty that requires current knowledge, not just a door lawyer that anyone can do.
That's right, and it's specialty, and it can change. You know, it's constantly changing, and, you know, what works today may not work tomorrow, and so you need to be aware to keep updated with all the changes.
Gotcha. Now, I understand, I think a lot of our listeners understand, you know, they need a will, maybe they need a trust, but why is this Medicaid planning becoming such a big deal that you have specialist attorneys, even companies popping up? What's the whole deal with Medicaid planning?
Well, because most seniors have Medicare, and Medicare is a health insurance, not a long-term care insurance, and not every senior has long-term care insurance to help pay for it. So Medicaid is a means to help pay for your long-term care. So if
you like nursing homes,
so, right, I was just going to say, if you are deteriorating, you can't manage yourself and you need assistance and you need to move into a nursing home, for example, they could run anywhere from $8,000 to $10,000
a month. A month?
A month here in the state of Florida.
Yeah.
So
that's incredible. I mean, you'd be broke in a minute. That's wow.
So that getting back to coming to me earlier, why it's never too soon. So
right.
We can do some planning to organize and maneuver, preserve your assets, and make sure you have assets to help pay for your long-term care.
In my mind, it was for people maybe diagnosed with Alzheimer's to start the process then. But it's more important for everyone to understand the plan. You know, that old saying, you know, you don't plan to fail, you fail to plan.
Right. And with someone with Alzheimer's or some sort of dementia, you want to plan earlier, because if you don't plan and they don't have the appropriate documents, power of attorney, healthcare surrogates, the only way you're going to get somebody to make decisions for them is through guardianship. Now you've got the court involved and other people potentially involved, and it takes longer, it costs more money, and it could have been resolved with just having a power of attorney or healthcare surrogate in place.
So what's the point of the Medicaid planning? It's very expensive, so what happens? You pay for it until you run out of money, and then the government kicks in? How's that work?
Well, that's a way of looking at it. What it does is, if you're pre-planning, when I have clients that are pre-planning, we're pre-planning how and where to deal with assets, getting them maybe long-term care insurance.
Okay.
And if they need to go into a facility that's $8,000 a month or whatever, that they have means to pay for that. Because you got to also remember, some people are couples. They're married. They're not all singles. So you have you're paying for $8,000 a month in a facility, and you're paying for the healthy spouse at home. So you're really paying for two homes, two residents.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't think of it that way.
So you have to develop a plan on how to pay for that, get some long-term care insurance.
So it's not just the person that's in the facility. It's also the person who starts to continue living their life, and even worse now because they have to go visit and spend time.
Right.
And the kids are split.
And then what happens when they both get sick and to a point where they can't care for themselves, and they're both in a facility.
So they don't give, like, BOGOs, buy one, get one, facilities, nothing like that?
No.
Wow, that sounds, like, really expensive. I mean, what happens if someone doesn't have money? Just is it the same facility that Medicaid would pay for, or is it lesser? I mean, do you get a better facility if you private pay, in other words?
Not necessarily.
To
be a facility that takes Medicaid dollars, obviously, their regulations and requirements and documentation that they need to have to meet to be eligible to take Medicaid dollars. Not all facilities either want to deal with the federal government and the paperwork that's involved. Some of them want to be more independent, so they don't take Medicaid dollars. Doesn't mean they're better, doesn't mean they're worse, because if they don't want to deal with the level of care that the statute and the law, Medicaid law, requires, and they just want to be, there are some really bad, you know, like anything else, schemers out there.
Sure.
You know, they're not going to take Medicaid, you know, because they're going to be their schemers. They don't want to answer to the, to the government
or
anybody
else.
Sure,
there's a whole spectrum of places.
All right.
What about, you know, if someone comes to an elder law attorney and they're not sick yet and they have normal person assets, you know, $200-$300, maybe they have a homestead that they're just paying off and they want to make sure their kids get something. Is that like what you do? Is like there a way to save some of this money? Is it all going to get used up in nursing care?
Well, the first thing I'd ask is where are they in their life coming to see me? Mm-hmm. You know, are they, you know, 85 years old, relatively well, but not well in the sense that they're 85 years old.
Phil's 57.
I resemble that remark.
And are you saying he's not well?
Well, you get to know him a little.
Oh.
But no, I mean, let's say someone's like, you know, in their mid to late 60s, they just paid off their house. You know, can you keep some of the assets in the family, or does it all have to be liquidated like when they go to a nursing home?
No, we can keep some assets in the family. That's part of the pre-planning. The earlier you come, the more options and things we can do to preserve your assets. You know, the later you come, like you said, if they're 85, like I just said, and they're deteriorating and they're going into the facility tomorrow and they come and see me the day before, what do we do? Mom and dad or whatever is going into the facility tomorrow. Well, obviously there's less we can do with that money and the less possibility of preserving it. I mean, we could preserve it, but not 100% of it. Where if they came in at 57 and we started planning all that.
Well, that seems to be a good age. But we are a national program on iHeart, TuneIn, and iRadio Now, and I know we have listeners like in Chicago. And there's a lot of families that have their parents here in Florida. If I'm listening in Chicago and I'm worried about mom or dad or both, you know, because of the issues, what can you do from a different state?
Call me. And we could do, because mom and dad are in Florida, right. So Florida law would be what's...
Yeah, they have Florida driver's license.
Right.
Voter registration.
We could do the planning in Florida.
Yeah.
I mean, Medicaid is a federal program, but it's implemented by the state. So every state has some differences in it. But because mom and dad are here in Florida, we could deal with Florida. You know, it's going to deal with how Florida governs Medicaid. So Junior out in Chicago, they call me, email me. You know, nowadays we could talk and send stuff back and forth. It's nothing, and we can work to help, you know, mom and dad come to the office and they could be on the phone and we can talk and decide what would work best for that family.
Do they have to have a power of attorney to discuss things with you or health circuit or things along those lines?
Well, power of attorney, right. Well, healthcare circuit, they'll need that if they need to help with mom and dad's healthcare decisions. So since I'm not a doctor, the power of attorney is what they'll need to work with me. And that's one of the things that allow them to talk to me and for them to act on mom and dad's behalf if they're not there. But I also always encourage mom and dad, unless there's a dementia type issue, but you always want mom and dad involved in it because, after all, it's mom and dad's life, it's mom and dad's money,
right.
And mom and dad are the clients.
Yeah, I was going to say, they can maintain some semblance of control even if they get, you know, older and the kids want to help, but mom and dad can keep some control over, you know, what's going on with them.
Right. I mean, look, as long as they're competent, they can make whatever decisions they want to do. You may not like what they're deciding to do, mm-hmm. but they certainly can do that. The power of attorney allows you, maybe if they're not competent or not able, if, whether it's mentally or physically able to make decisions or do things, the power of attorney will allow you, whoever they name as their power or agent, mm-hmm. in fact, to make those decisions for them.
Okay. So what if, like, all of the kids aren't agreeing to this? Is it really more the parents have to agree or the kids have to agree? You know, some kids say, hey, I don't want to spend the money on, you know, Medicaid planning. I want to, you know, I want it there when they go, I get the money. Like, you know how kids are with estate planning.
Well
some.
Well, first off, they came early enough. Mm-hmm. Mom and dad are very competent and very well and have had their plans done. So Junior is out of luck, you know, because
gotcha.
They did it. And now later in life, when they say supposedly the dementia or they're not doing well is seeping in and they think, you know, they want to do it, my first answer to them is, if you don't plan, they're going to go into a facility that costs $8,000 to $10,000 a month. And how long do you think that'll be before your money is spent?
Yeah, that makes planning make good sense, for sure.
You know, we're going to have to take a break. And as a station identification, you're listening to Legal News and Review on 96.9, 103.9, and 740 AM. And nationally on iHeart, TuneIn, and iRadio Now. We're speaking with Gail Fisher, and this is regarding elder law. And the question I have for you until we get back, are there ways to leave an inheritance to my children without losing the ability to control my finances? Don't answer. Wait till we come back.
Do you need an attorney? Call someone you can trust. The Broward County Bar Association, a not-for-profit organization, was founded in 1925 to foster courtesy, ethics, and professionalism, as well as to provide necessary legal services throughout South Florida. The Broward County Bar Association, 3,000 members strong, has attorney members that work throughout the entire state of Florida, as well as nationally and internationally. Remember, the Broward County Bar Association is a referral you can count on. Call the Broward County Bar Association at 954-764-8310 for all your legal needs. A referral you can count on. 954-764-8310. Or contact online at browardbar.org. Non-lawyer spokesperson.
Welcome back to Legal News and Review. Recipients of the Award of Excellence from the Florida Bar. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go online to belegalbuzz.com. Once again, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
Legal News and Review is back from our short recess. I'm here with legal panel Gary Singer. We're speaking
Hi.
To Gail Fisher. Hey, Gary. And we left on our break. It was a little teaser. And sincerely, the question is, again, are there ways to leave an inheritance to my children, but without losing the ability to control my finances?
Yes.
Well, thank
short
you for coming, Gail.
Yes, right. And there are several ways of doing that. You can set up a revocable living trust and have your assets in the trust. You would be the trustee, control the trust, the assets in there while you're alive and taking mm-hmm. care of yourself. And then when you die, there's instructions in the trust how to for the assets to pass to the kids or whomever you wanted to pass to. Or you could do a last will and testament. You know, so when you die, you go through the probate process and
right.
the assets are passed to whomever.
No, okay. Absolutely. Money does, unfortunately, change family. Inevitably, it does. Civilly,
money
rivalry.
Does strange things to
it
families
does.
As well.
It absolutely does. That's why I'm not telling anyone when I win the lotto. But
you should have that problem, Phil.
I'm telling you, and hopefully I'll be cursed with it. But I've heard.
But call your lawyer first.
Of course.
I want to know about vets. Can we ask about vets? Do you help work with vets?
Veterans
in veterans care
yes.
planning?
That's a good question.
What's that all about?
Well, there's some veterans benefits called the VA pension program, mm-hmm. and under that, there's the aid in attendance, which a lot of people may have heard of, and that's a means where veterans can provide for the veteran, and then when the veteran dies, the veteran's spouse, some money to help pay for their daily care. I call it the veteran's version of Medicaid, because just like Medicaid, there is a financial component to it, too. So you financially, you need the assistance, and medically you need to be you need the assistance medically. If you're a veteran, oh gosh, I meant to check that because I know they changed the figure this year, and I forget to check it. It's about $2,000. It might just be over $2,000 a month for the veteran. And the surviving spouse, when she applies, I think it's somewhere around $1,500, $1,700.
Now, is that all veterans or just retired veterans? What about four-year discharge? I mean, is there, like, different categories, disabled?
Yeah, you have to be a veteran that served during wartime.
Okay.
So World War II, Korea, Vietnam,
the Gulf War,
which we are still in the middle of, Gulf War I, we're still in a time of war.
So as long as you got that little ribbon.
So you need to serve during that time of war, minimum 90 days. You do not have to have served in the theater, so you can serve here in the States and not have gone to Vietnam or wherever. You have to have an honorable discharge.
I'm hitting all these so far. Keep going.
And medically and financially.
I've hit every one of these so
and
far.
And medically and financially, you need it.
Who doesn't need more money?
But for this program, medically and financially,
so
you're going to need it.
There's
a program.
Levels.
Right. For those that are listening, if my parent already is in a nursing home, is it too late for me to hire an elder law attorney?
No. A lot of my clients come to me when mom, you know, the children come, mom and dad is already, or the spouse, because the other spouse is already in a nursing home.
Isn't there like a whole bunch of different types of nursing homes now? You know, there's different types of care levels.
You mean like assisted living places?
Yeah, it's very like I have to deal with some stuff with my mom and her health, and you know she's at home still, but there's all different levels. There's ones where am I talking about? I'm confused. Obviously,
they have some independent living facilities, which are. Some are not necessarily independent assisted living facilities. You're living independently on your own. They're not really providing you with any care.
Okay.
But they may have, you know, the strings to pull in the bathroom and the button to push if there's an emergency. So there's someone there in the facility if there's an issue to come and see it. The assisted living facilities are more the facilities where you need assistance. And so now you're living there and you need assistance with your daily, you know, the daily activities of living. And they'll be there to help you with that and take care of you. Then there's like a memory care unit, they'll call it, or memory care facility. Mm-hmm. And that's more so for, obviously, more dementia, Alzheimer's related.
Isn't there something like a skilled care?
Well, then there's the skilled nursing facility is what it's called, but it's also a nursing home. We, Medicaid refers to it as a skilled nursing facility. You and I may say, I got to go visit someone in the nursing home.
So that's what you would consider a nursing home. So I know, like, temporarily, she needed, like, around-the-clock care for a couple of weeks, and we had to, like, find a certain type of – it was really crazy.
Right. Then, you'll get to it, like, if you're in the hospital for 3 nights, then they'll release you to the rehab facility, which could be an assisted living facility or a nursing home, skilled nursing facility. They just have beds that they've designated for rehab.
No wonder you need an attorney for this. It's incredibly confusing.
Gail, I understand they have a 5-year look back in order to get qualifications for Medicaid. Is it illegal to transfer assets for the purpose of obtaining Medicaid benefits?
Well, the 5-year look back is 5 years look back from the date you make your Medicaid application. And they're going to look 5 years back to that. And the short answer is obviously you can't just give away money to qualify for Medicaid, and because you can't just give your money and say, hey, I'm poor, so you won't get it. So if it's within that look-back window, they'll see that you've given the money away. When you talk about giving money away, the thing is you can't give money to somebody, you know, your kids, you love them, they're great kids, and not receive fair market value in return. So Medicaid does not recognize love and affection as a fair market value. So when you give that, that's going to create a penalty. It's going to create a gift. That gift is a formula to divide it by the divisor, which is about $9,100, which is about the average cost of a nursing home facility in the state of Florida a month.
Right.
And that gives you a penalty, you know, and that's the penalty that you will, if you want everything else except for that gift, qualify for Medicaid, create a penalty where you won't get Medicaid. Then you'd have to reapply it once you're outside that penalty.
I really wish we had more time.
It's very complicated.
So call me.
Our last question before we go has to do with trust. Can't somebody set up a trust? I understand there's a host of different, like Spendthrift Trust or Special Needs Trust, to help meet the requirements for the five-year look back?
Well, again, if you transfer money within that 5 years into a trust, that's you've given the trust money and have not received fair market value in return. So, but there are one or two exceptions, like such as a pooled trust. Without going into all detail,
right.
There's an exception. But the short answer is no, because once you've transferred into the trust, you have not gotten something back for fair market value in return.
So this is so confusing. How would someone reach out to you if they had questions?
Well, they can call me at 954-315-1169. Again, that's 954-315-1169. You can email me at gail@lawofficesgailfisher. That's Gail, G-A-I-L, at Law Offices Gail Fisher, F-I-S-H-E-R.
You can Google it.
You can it. On my website, www.gailfisher.lawofficesgailfisher. I don't even know it. www.lawofficesgailfisher.com.
Well, and if you visit her on the web, you should sign up for her newsletters. I get them, and they're very informed. What Gail doesn't know, she didn't until the pre-show, is that I actually refer some people to her for elder law because she's very well known for it. She's a member of something called Elder Council. Phil, I think we're out of time.
We are, unfortunately, but let me tell you, she is great. She is a lawyer's lawyer. She's an educator by training in background school.
That's right.
So as well.
I want to thank you very much, Gail, for coming, from my co-host, Linda Alley, for coming, from Kelly Ustol for coming as well, and to Phil, and most importantly to our listeners, thank you very much. Be safe and be legal.
You've been listening to the award-winning Legal News and Review, recognized by the Florida Bar's Award of Excellence. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go to belegalbuzz.com. And to reach Gary Singer, board-certified real estate and syndicated columnist, appearing in 400 media outlets, including the front page of the Money Section every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, from the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, call 954-851-1448 for legal news and review. Remember, be legal.